Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, synchronized swimming, tailgates before a college football game, late night karaoke, especially late night karaoke. There is nothing better than a duet of summer love, and I can assure you that. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., and Claudia Bellafato holding it down in the DraftKings studio in Boston. We got a great show for you guys today. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, review it. Leave us a five-star rating and check us out live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network. And, of course, the best of Gojo and Golic from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, wherever you hear VSiN on the radio. Claudia, what do we got coming up today?
Yeah, packed Monday for you. LeBron possibly getting what he wants to play with his son. We'll see. Bronny to the draft. We'll talk about how the decision could shape free agency. Tiger's last ride at Augusta. Can Tiger make one final memorable Masters moment? And two for the title, baby. UConn-Purdue face off for the championship. It's going to be a good one. Hard to sort of match up with what we saw last night, though, guys. South Carolina finished the season undefeated, taking down Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes yesterday for the Natty title. 87-75, the final score. Dawn Staley's squad now the 10th team in D1 history to go undefeated. I mean, the size helped Gojo, the defense, but how about those bench points? Everything was clicking for this squad down the stretch.
Yeah, Dad, this one was just wave after wave of South Carolina that ultimately willed out in this game. And it started off with a bang in the total opposite direction. Iowa burst out to a huge lead. Caitlin Clark with 18 first quarter points, the most points scored by any player in any quarter in a championship setting in the women's tournament. And what we saw was, I think, the calling card for the South Carolina team all year, Dad. Dawn Staley had built so much depth in this lineup that you end up with them outscoring Iowa's bench 37-0. Just a staggering indictment of what one team had and had built up over time and what Iowa was dealing with around Caitlin Clark that ultimately ends with South Carolina cutting down the net.
You know, there's the macro and the micro, and the micro is that 37-0 from the bench, which is unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. The macro to me is this is the first team in the last 25 seasons to go undefeated after losing all their starters. We have to remember that there are five new starters this year on the team, and they ran the table. And that's a credit to Dawn Staley. They really only had one young lady come in from the portal. You know, she convinced these women to stay and kind of wait their turn, something you don't see a lot anymore. And listen, it worked in this instance, and this isn't me, you know, degrading if you go and transfer somewhere else, but it worked here. She convinced those young ladies to stay, had one transfer in, and they run the table. That, to me, is one of the most amazing things. And Camila Cardosa is the only one leaving now. Now they went from exchanging all five starters to losing basically one and the team that they're going to have coming back. So yeah, we're going to dive into this game and the game, you know, the semifinal games as well. But what they have done, and especially Mike, you know, we talk about within the game, you look at what they've done, and this is a quarters game, not the halves like the men. And I always talk about this in football. When you come out in the second half, what adjustments did you make? What did you do? And you go from their semifinal game against North Carolina State that was 32-31 at half. They outscored North Carolina State 29-6 in the third quarter. In this game, they actually held Iowa to the in the teens in the second, third, and fourth quarter, including outscoring them 19-13 in the third quarter, the lowest scoring quarter for Iowa. So, I mean, third quarter has been great for them. They come out of the locker room, you know, ready to go with whatever adjustments, and they certainly made some nice adjustments on as we said with stopping Caitlin Clark. What you mentioned, 18 in the first quarter, 12 the rest of the way. She was bad shooting. She did not shoot very, very well in this one. 10 of 28 overall, 5 of 13 from three. As she wasn't hitting threes, man, a couple of the South Carolina Gamecock women were absolutely just dousing threes in the fourth quarter of that game.
Yeah, I think an interesting way to sum up the story of what you talked about, how this team was built and what its goal was going into this game. Stopping Caitlin Clark, one of the biggest offensive forces in college basketball's history, and that was Raven Johnson, who, remember, last year was the subject of the meme when in the game they played in the semifinal round between South Carolina and Iowa, Raven's sitting out at the three-point line and Caitlin Clark waves her off, basically treats her like a self-check out there. And while Raven didn't shoot well in this game or play well, you heard from all her teammates, yeah, she sacrificed her energy offensively to go out there and be the defensive stopper for us on Caitlin Clark and to harass her and bother her the way that we had seen West Virginia harass and bother Caitlin Clark, the way that we had seen UConn in the prior round, get very physical with her, try and basically shut her off. And so that defensive intensity from a woman who's just a sophomore who came back after suffering that embarrassment on the big stage to now be a part of this winning effort, Dad, that's exactly what you're talking about, is how young this team is, how new this team was, but how much they'd already internalized, because again, they've lost one regular season game, I think, in the last 2 years or something like that. So they've done a lot of high level winning and a lot of high level basketball, and it paid off for them big time in this moment here. And Dad, I guess that does bring us to the Caitlin Clark point of it on the other side, because if we're going to talk about the South Carolina team, incredible, this depth and what Dawn Staley's built, that is now officially a dynasty, right? When you look at the resume for them, the third championship in seven seasons with Dawn Staley at the helm, two in the last three, and wire to wire, the number one team in women's college basketball. In a year where we wanted to talk about so many other people, Dawn Staley and company quietly bided their time, said, we are going to just keep winning until the end when you're forced to talk about us over and over. And Dad, looking at Dawn Staley's resume now coming off of this, we've had a lot of conversation about goats and greats of the game, and we'll get to some of that as it pertains to Caitlin Clark's legacy coming off this. But looking for Dawn Staley, two-time Naismith College Player of the Year, three-time Olympic gold medal winner as a player, six-time WNBA All-Star, four-time Naismith Coach of the Year, and now three-time national champion. And Dad, you saw her get really emotional after this win, and I think it's a good reminder for people, like, no matter how easy it looks to all of us on the outside, winning is extremely hard. Like, the things it takes day to day to be that kind of team, no matter your sport, are more than most people can A, comprehend, and B, are willing to do. And so when you've got that compounded with all the newness on that roster, you can understand why this probably felt cathartic for Dawn Staley.
Oh, without question. And to put the exact number on it, you talked about her win the last 2 years, 74-1. They're 74-1, which is absolutely amazing. And yeah, she was very emotional in her expensive Louis Vuitton that she was wearing. A lot of people were talking about well.
Dawn, I love thing about how, Dawn is Dawn is dressing out here each and every night. I appreciate it. The Dawn Staley fashion show comes to play.
You know, as we see the ratings, and I'll be excited to see the ratings for this, as we saw what Iowa and UConn did, getting over 14 million people, we'll see what this game did. But it's opened up a lot more eyes onto the women's game, women's sports, but in this case, women's college basketball. So I'm glad you mentioned, because I don't think a lot of people, the casual fan who may have started tuning in, know of Dawn Staley's history. You mentioned, what a resume. What an incredible litany of accomplishments she has. So kudos to her. You know, as they continue on, and now Caitlin Clark is done playing basketball in college. And, you know, you bring up that question of all the accolades she got, Mike, individually. You know, what does it mean? What does it do to the resume when you can't cap it with a national championship, a team championship?
Yeah, and that had been a subject of a lot of the debate leading into this title game. And especially coming off, you mentioned that UConn game, an absolute barnstormer, one that really entertained all throughout, had the controversy at the end about the offensive foul call, which I know we didn't get to, you know, legislate that on the show because of when it took place on Friday. But, Dad, one of those things that unfortunately was the right call, even if it was in a moment where we'd rather not see the call up. It was almost, to me, a carbon copy of what we saw in the Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl where, yeah, you got to call it. It unfortunately ends the game, and you hate to see that. But we got bad angles on the broadcast. We got a better angle that showed up online after that showed, yeah, she absolutely stepped out. That was absolutely a moving screen, and Iowa advances because of that. But, man, it was fun seeing everybody up in arms about the same play. Communal watching like that is always an incredible experience, and to now get that in the women's game is another one of those things where you go, huh, this feels like progress.
I completely agree. And we'll get to the money progress of this thing as well. But on that call, and this is why Twitter is so difficult for me anyway, in explaining. That's why I repost and I quote. That's pretty much it. Because I tried to make a statement about it. And of course, as you start to go back and forth on it, I realize this is why I don't do it. You know, I had thought that we said the same thing where, as I said, it's a shame they made that call at that point. You know, spelling out that once you saw it, it was a moving screen. My point, though, and I just wasn't going to keep going because I just keep going and you're not going to win any conversations on Twitter. My point in that whole thing is that was a foul. But, Mike, you know this, is if you're a player, you normally don't expect the call at that point. You don't expect it. If you get it, I'd say you're somewhat surprised, but you normally don't expect it. If it's coming to the end of the game, there are times where you can sometimes get away with more, or the expectation is they're not going to call it unless it's unbelievably blatant. Now, that was a foul, but sometimes, as I said, players on the court, the field, the ice, whatever, sometimes will not expect to get that call in crunch time of a game like that.
See, I'm less of the ilk where it's, oh, you don't call that then, and more it's based off what you've done the entire game. Like we always say at the beginning of a game, as a player, you're feeling out officials. What are they going to call? What are they not going to call? Last night's game was a perfect example of that. There was some ticky-tack hand check stuff called early on in that game, and the announcers all said, all right, now you know as a player, you've got information. That UConn-Iowa game was violent. Like that was a physical game all throughout the contest. There were missed calls on both sides, and so I thought based on the way they had called it, letting a lot of physical play go, that wasn't necessarily in line with what they did. But again, you mentioned the angle I saw the next day did appear so blatant where, I mean, God, it looked like an offensive lineman trying to protect the near point on mirror dodge. I was like, I recognize what that is, and it's a little bit too physical for a screen where you're supposed to be stationary. So I think that was one of those where, again, part of your job as the TV broadcast crew is to make sure you're telling the story. And I thought those couple of angles that we got didn't really do justice just how egregious that foul call was in that moment. And it ended up being really controversial, like you said, ton of conversation about it, which then also led to a big number. So I'm curious because, again, the final four games were ESPN games. The Sunday game was an ABC game. So I'm sure this number is going to go crazy, especially because this game was so close as well. It was so compelling throughout. And it had the backdrop of what you mentioned, Dad, which was this GOAT conversation around Caitlin Clark and her legacy that had really charged the whole sport. And I thought this was another moment where I did want to give a tip of the cap to Dawn Staley, because I think the one thing you can say about Dawn is she is acutely aware of the power of her voice. She knows, given who she is to the sport, given the platform that she's got because of how dominant her team is right now, that when she speaks, people are going to listen. And we saw that in a couple of different instances in the lead up to this. You saw the moment at the press conference in the lead up to the championship game where she was asked a question about transgender athletes in sports and said with open arms, I'm of the opinion that if you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman, you want to play sports or vice versa, you should be able to play. She said it knowing it was not going to be universally well received by everybody, but it was what she believed. And she understood in that moment, hey, I am being put in a bad position by what, in my opinion, was a bad faith question, and I'm going to respond in a way that I believe I can shoulder because I believe this is important. And in a different vein, but I think in the same light of understanding the weight her voice carries, Dawn Staley, after this game, got up on the microphone in the midst of celebrating this moment for her team and chose to look and shine a light on Caitlin Clark in the way that we're going to hear right now.
I really would just like to say that I have to congratulate Iowa on an incredible season. Awesome, awesome. And I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport, and it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games. We appreciate you.
Making sure she slid in GOATs, knowing that that had been the popular discourse. Another example, Dad, of she is purposeful with what she has said here, and she understands and is trying to include people. All of the things that I mentioned are Dawn Staley trying to welcome more and more people to the women's game, and I just think we should count ourselves so fortunate to have such an ambassador like this for this sport at such a critical time.
You know, someone over the summer, I think, who had contemplated early retirement to where she is now. And like you mentioned, you know, she is a big name and a big voice in the collegiate game. And you go back to that transgender question. I mean, boy, she took a while. It's like she was not expecting that question, that's for sure. And you know, while I don't necessarily agree with her answer, if that's what she feels, then she is certainly more than right to give her opinion about it. But then on the other side, as you mentioned, to take the mic, get the microphone back and give Caitlin Clark her due, I think was a great moment, was a very, very good moment for the game. And the game lives on. We wait to see this number. As we said, last year's title game was over 12. This year, a Final Four game was over 14. You know, what will it be this year? You know, especially compared to the men's game, they're inching awfully close to what a men's game is going to be that we're going to get tonight.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, the GOAT conversation around Caitlin, Dad, is one thing that had kind of spiraled, I think, pretty far out of control. We had heard it weighed in from a lot of former players, especially the UConn contingent, that all said, yeah, of course she needs a championship to be considered the GOAT of the sport. And I think trying to spend too much time on any one of those things or trying to crown one true GOAT is how we end up talking LeBron Jordan for years on end in a way that definitely captivates people, but isn't necessarily productive. Dad, I think Caitlin Clark's legacy will ultimately be one of the all-time greats in the sport. Someone who, especially at this juncture, I think we always talk about, hey, you know, what Magic and Bird did for the NBA at that time that ended up making them into one of the most captivating TV products that we have right now in the birth there. I think Caitlin Clark came along at a similar time where it's not to discount the greats before her, but it's to understand how important she was at this juncture, how great she was also given the surrounding cast that wasn't as full of 4- and 5-star talent there at Iowa to do it at a place that hadn't necessarily been a traditional power. I think all those things, as we get a little bit further from the immediacy of the conversation and how polarizing it was, are all going to age really well for her.
Yeah, I mean, listen, being considered one of the greats is not a bad thing, right? I mean, and that's where she's going to be because, you know, we talk about team sports and team championships, and I've talked about this for sure, that in basketball, you can have the most influence because you're out in the court. And for her, she's been out in the court for entire games. So you can have influence on the offensive side and the defensive side to help your team. So I do think, you know, championships are important in that sport. That's why I don't think she will go. That's one of the biggest barrier of her, of why she probably will not go down as the greatest ever. But like Steph, she'll go down as Steph Curry is not going to go down as the greatest NBA player of all time. He's certainly going to be one of the top ones, but he's going to go down as the greatest shooter. And she's going to go down as the greatest shooter as well. So, I mean, we're mincing, you know, things here with her. She is one of the greats to ever play this game. And in a sport and that had been really growing, she helped it exponentially grow even more, without question.
Yeah.
And
she was a catalyst for this, yes.
Yes, the women can keep carrying that on as we move on to more and more, maybe getting them actually some money involved in these tournaments now as well. So, yeah, she's going to go down. I think that's going to be the line. She's going to go down as one of the greatest collegiate basketball players of all time.
Yes, I don't think that should or could be controversial, considering she'll now leave this tournament holding basically not only every meaningful regular season record, meaningful career record, but also for these conversations, every postseason record. And I do think amidst these GOAT conversations, we kind of normalize how hard it is. Again, Dawn Staley reduced to tears after this game, because winning is really hard, because this isn't the NBA or the WNBA where you've got series games in the postseason where the best team always wills out. You are single elimination every night, getting every team's best stop, and you are one misstep away from being sent home because of the format of this. And so for back-to-back years to find your way into the title game in that kind of setting is a remarkable testament to the player, the team, and everyone else. But they take second stage and second fiddle to South Carolina. Congratulations to the 2024 champion Gamecocks on the women's side of college basketball. Dawn Staley's bunch holds up the trophy. Coming up next, we'll get ready to see who holds up the trophy on the men's side as Connecticut and Purdue get ready to square off in the national title game tonight. Hey, Dad, what do you do when you're out with friends, the waiter comes up and tries to take everybody's order, but the whole table freezes up and everyone's looking at each other trying to find some help?
That's a great question. So what should I do?
You should have some confidence, Dad, or as our friends at Jägermeister call it, shotfidence. If everyone's having trouble ordering, here's what you do. You take charge, you grab the bull by the horns, you find that dog in you, and you make an executive decision. And just order for the table, a round of ice-cold Jägermeister shots. Damn, that's cold. Because apparently, we've all been drinking Jägermeister wrong.
Did not know that. How should we be drinking it?
Glad you asked, Dad. We should be drinking it ice-cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that brings up other things that I love ice cold as well. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, that's going to be a candy bar pulled out of the freezer. That's my way of eating candy.
Oh, I love it. On the golf course out there, you get to the turn in the middle of the round there, and you get to that little clubhouse there, and they've always got the candy bar options, and I always see they've usually got a little box of them in the freezer, and it always makes it better on a hot day out on the golf course, taking a bite of that cold, cold chocolate and getting ready to go for the rest of my round. It's the same way with Jägermeister. So wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice-cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold.
And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
We're back here on Gojo and Golic, and it's a mic'd up Monday. So, of course, we have to hear sound from one of the head coaches who may win it all. That is UConn's Dan Hurley tonight. He says, not just on the game itself, but what makes a championship team.
You got to be able to score, obviously. You know, to win a six-game single elimination tournament. You know, I think that the days of that kind of the rock fight style of play in modern basketball, I think it's going to be tough to win that way. I think obviously balanced roster, young players with talent that are insulated by, returning players to your program with that could uphold the culture, and then strategic, portal additions that could put you over the top. But I think it's, the roster construction, skill, skilled players that can process the game and balance in terms of veterans and young players.
And having a really good big man helps too, and they have that with Dunovan Clingan going up against Zach Edey. So this is going to be a big man competition that I'm very excited to watch. But he just listed all the things that a championship team needs, which they do have, Gojo. And we talked about heading into this whole tournament that they were the favorite. They remain the favorite. So what's your take on this one? Do they come out as the winner?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's funny when he talks about how to build the perfect team in modern basketball. He's just got to look in his own locker room and basically just go down the list of the stuff that he has, because right now they're it. It is that perfect mix. And Dad, I think it's funny because what he described there is, I think, sort of the ideal mix across sports. It's what we've seen teams like Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State and company doing college football on the top end as well, where it's, yeah, you need this mix. So obviously you win with talent. Like, we're going to talk about John Calipari coming up in about 10 minutes, who is on his way out, it sounds like, reportedly, with Kentucky to head to Arkansas, in large part because Kentucky, over the course of a long time, got sick of all of that talent they were acquiring not turning into the wins that they expected to come. But Cal always led with, and most people in college sports understand, yeah, you're only going to win if you've got the best players. And so for UConn, for Georgia, for Alabama, for any of these teams at the top of their sport, it's, yeah, you recruit an incredible base of players. You have a couple of your homegrown guys, like he mentioned, with Klingon and others. You've got your veteran players like Tristan Newton who have stuck around there, and then the portal is used as something to supplement some of your needs, not necessarily be the bulk of your roster.
Yeah, listen, they have an answer, right, for everything. I mean, they have extremely good players, but they're consistent and they have an answer. It's amazing to me. We talked about them leading, where they trailed just for 28 seconds in the first four games. I mean, Alabama in the Final Four led for almost 5 minutes in the first half and had a commanding 23-18 lead with 11 minutes to go in the first half. That was the largest deficit of the tournament for UConn. I mean, that is amazing, absolutely amazing. They just wear you down. You know, as Dan Hurley has said, you know, we may not be there at 18 minutes or 25 minutes, but we're just going to grind it. We're going to wear you down. And that's where I love, I mean, a bit of old school. You see some of the drills that they do, Mike. You don't even see some of these basic fundamental drills in middle school anymore, let alone high school, let alone college or the NBA. I mean, they're doing drills, I mean, that were around when I was a kid, for dribbling the ball and ball handling. It's amazing to watch, you know, but they do it over and over. And it's like my dad, you know, getting your stance. I got my football stance when I was in grade school, 50 times a night, right-handed, left-handed. You just do those little things so they come natural. And you just watch them do the drills. It was great for a guy like me to see, man, yeah, they don't forget the basics. You know, I remember my dad always telling me before, I would talk to him before every game and all the way to the NFL. And one of the last things he would say is, remember what got you there. Remember working out in the backyard, or, you know, when you were young, the fundamentals, that's what got you there. Don't forget those. And Connecticut does it so well. We watched it on the women's side. Their defense, Mike, against Iowa was unbelievable, what they were doing to Caitlin Clark. But just and defense, you know, can be X's and O's, but then sheer want to, you know, and they have the want to and the ability to do it. It's fun to watch.
It is. And remembering what got them there, I think, is part of that ability to come back when things are down a little bit or off a little bit early. It's the common thread, I think, between UConn on the men's side and South Carolina on the women's side, where they're never really all that deterred by what they see in these situations. And for UConn early on, that was, hey, you got down because Alabama was just shooting the lights out of the gym in the first half of that game. Right. It's what we said was really their only chance was to go and make it a math problem for Connecticut, where it was, hey, we are so deadly from three right now that you're going to have to work and try and climb out from this deficit. And they were able to there. And Claudia, that's what brings us now to Purdue on the other side, not necessarily built the same way, but has been the large, quite literally and metaphorically, final boss for a lot of college basketball this season.
Yes, and Zach Edey puts the large in large, and he came back for a fourth season, and he tells us why. I think we can all assume why, because when you're that good, it's kind of fun to play basketball, but he told us why he came back for a fourth season.
This game is what we've been talking about all year. It's the reason I came back, is playing games like these. You know, it's really the reason I've been playing college basketball for 4 years. Like, we talk about this every year, and to finally get to this game is big time. And then we got to obviously keep going and keep playing. But yes, these are the games you come back for, and these are the games that you play for, and you work and you practice every day for.
Coming into this game, they are 7-point underdogs, and you guys can speak to this while playing. You played football, but, you know, same thing. When you head into a game as an underdog, it sort of gives you that chip on the shoulder, maybe a little bit of motivation now in his last year. Do you guys think that helps at all, Senior? I know you played football for a while, so does that help him, you think, coming into this game for his last season?
Well, certainly it's motivation, but I think some of the big motivation is look who you're playing. And we also get to this point, you know, I heard Caitlin Clark answer this about motivation or being ready. And the answer, you've heard it from others as well in a game like this. If you're not ready for this game, what are you ever going to be ready for? If you're not ready to go in a game like this, I mean, this is what you play for, and this is why he came back. It worked for him. And now it's like, okay, it's worked. I got here. Now we're facing a potential 2-time national champ. So now it's like, yes, we're underdogs, but that's to be expected. But now we can, this is exactly for me to crown my college career, kind of like what Caitlin Clark was trying to do. Zach Edey is now trying to do. They have a nice game against North Carolina State. The Burns-Edey matchup never really materialized there, as we were all hoping it would, as I think DJ Horn for North Carolina State was the only player in double figures for the starters, just one player off the bench was. So that game kind of got away from them as well. So I get, for Zach Edey, it's just like, yeah, I came back. You love when it works out, because there are guys that come back, you know, that come back that could have gone to the league and didn't, that don't get that far, but at least he has a chance to cap it off.
He does, and it's an interesting matchup, too. We've talked all about it. This has led to, I think, the matchup of bigs that we were all really excited about, and the DJ Burns mm-hmm. one was going to be fun, but it was just such a difference in overall physical ability, right? 7'4 versus 6'9 at best was going to be something that was always an uphill battle, no matter how smooth our boy DJ was. And so now you get Donovan Klingon, who's, I think, a much more athletic version of that middle guy. While he doesn't necessarily have, like, outside shooting touch or things like that as it projects to the next level, he's the guy we see running the floor, or even in that semifinal game, getting out on the move, creating problems in transition, going up against Zach Edey, who is taller, older, bigger, stronger. He is all this metal and battle-tested nature of college basketball, going up against a guy in Donovan Klingon who's expected to be more at the next level, and the draft board reflects that.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'll say it like I said in the Final Four or any big game, you hope one of the big guys or one of the major players, in this case, we got two bigs playing against one another. You hope nobody ends up on the bench 5 minutes into the game. Edey doesn't get called for a lot of fouls. He's so damn big, you know, he doesn't really have to foul to block shots or to redirect shots or to have nobody even try to come into the paint. But now you got a 7-2, you know, right there going against you. So it will be more contested in the paint than it's been. So, of course, that's a matchup I'm looking forward to.
Yep, that'll be the battle. Alabama was raining threes. Purdue, they shoot a great percentage, second in three-point percentage in college basketball, but about like 240th in attempts at just over 20 a game. So styles make fights, and this style is big. Big is the style. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament all the way through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. So whether you're bought in on Heat culture at this point or think the Boston Celtics can survive a bump in the road, we got options for you. Just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code GOJO. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code GOJO only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21-plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr. and Mike Golic Sr. And late in the night after we got through an incredible day of women's college basketball, after we got through a little bit of WrestleMania 40 with an all-time main event, all of a sudden some news started to rumble concerning the future of John Calipari at the University of Kentucky. And that quickly went from smoke to a full-blown raging fire as we get the report from ESPN's Pete Thamel that John Calipari was finalizing a five-year deal to become the next men's basketball coach at Arkansas, sources told ESPN on Sunday night. And so for more on that, we're delighted to welcome in our buddy Peter Burns. You can catch him hosting over on the on ESPN and the SEC Network, as well as Sirius XM and the grand poobah of all things SEC. So PB, walk me through this last night, because this looked like it happened in about the span of 30 minutes here, but how big a shock is this to folks around the SEC that you've got Cal jumping ship within the conference?
I mean, just the Photoshop of him already wearing the Arkansas red just looks so weird. Now, not the Photoshop of him looking like Bobby Petrino in the neck brace like back in the day for Arkansas, but it's just strange, right? And we had kind of heard some, you know, kind of rumblings that, hey, Musk was not happy. He was going to be leaving. And sure enough, that ended up happening. And then one of the names, obviously, is like, you play the game. I'm like, all right, who would be next? And we kind of joked around like, I mean, how about Cal, right? And then sure enough, you know, you see this thing explode. I will tell you this, to blame for several different, well, a lot of reasons, honestly, but I've shut down and deleted social media off of my phone two different times in the last probably 2 months. The morning Nick Saban retired, and then literally about midday yesterday. And then I had to get immediately right back on it. These are the worst. So I'm never deleting it, because God only knows what ends up happening the next time I end up deleting this thing. It's out of control, guys. Unbelievable.
You know, we all thought, we all thought possibly he was going to get fired. If they did fire him, it would be $33 million. They had to pay him out. They come out pretty much right after and say he's going to be back. So it was a bit of a bombshell without question. Then the next question is, he had such success at Kentucky with these one and dones, but as of late, he has not had success with this. So you wonder, if he's going to go to Arkansas, is he going to change his entire process of how he goes about building a team?
I mean, he has to, right? I mean, that's the whole, you know, campaign that he was running about, hey, I've learned, you know, I learned that I can't just have McDonald's All-Americans, 18-year-old guys, and all of a sudden Jack Golke, who's 37 years old, is sitting there just raining threes, like, because he was ready for that moment. So I think that it was a plea to Kentucky of, I was going to change. And at the same point, he realized he needs to change. I absolutely love this deal, guys, for every single party involved, right? Because, I mean, when you think about it now, you get, Kentucky gets a brand new head coach, a Hall of Fame head coach that's been there before. They get a little bit more of a commitment when it comes down to spending some money when it comes to name, image, and likeness. And that's a whole different ball of wax. Like, how weird is it right now that we're talking about what his NIL budget is going to be? I mean, basically, you're saying, here's your free agency money to go spend. But that's a whole different ball of wax. But for Kentucky now, too, you don't have to pay the buyout that you just mentioned that was likely coming had he not made it to at least the Sweet 16 next year. And now you're sitting there as like, I've got a blue blood program. The bones are good. It's a really good time to purchase this product, right? Or to be the head coach here, because it's never been lower, yet the fan base is still there. Name, image, and likeness is there. Kentucky basketball is going to be bigger than Coach Cal. It's a win-win, and it's a win-win for us in the SEC, because now we get the chaos of Arkansas versus Kentucky and those damn storylines.
I was just going to say, the fact that he is staying inside the conference is a gift to the content gods here. You're absolutely right. Peter, you mentioned it, though, the Kentucky relationship between Cal and the fans. When did that sour and why? Because it seemed like all throughout this last year, every time things went hot or cold with Kentucky, there was this call, it felt like, for Cal's job the entire way.
It started when they lost to St. Peter's a couple years ago. And then it started, obviously, it steamrolled with the Oakland loss, because all of this was, hey, I like this team. This team is built for March. It was Cal saying, hey, there's only one tournament we worry about, and it's the NCAA tournament. And then they fell flat on their face once again. And that's not good enough. The only thing that's crazy is that, keep in mind, Arkansas ran Eric Musselman out of town as well, too. This is a guy that just went to two Elite Eights, a couple of Sweet 16s, and they basically were like, oh, you have 1 year of transfers? Okay, get out of here. And then now Cal, who'd had less success over Kentucky is going to get paid by the billionaires over there. So again, and it may be a good thing, because I think Cal had kind of lost his fastball. It's almost like, you know, the guy that gets divorced from the prom queen, and all of a sudden it's like, all right, I'm going to start working out, and now I'm going to get in better shape, and I'm ready to go, and I've got this new blood. Maybe that's Cal over at Arkansas right now.
Yeah, it may be. Grass might be greener for him, a fresh start. Because you talk about now, you wonder how much NIL money you have for free agency. Well, he's good buddies with a big-time Arkansas benefactor, John Tyson. And yes, when you look in the grocery store and see Tyson Chicken, it's that Tyson. So a billionaire. So you got to believe the NIL money is going to be there, or you wouldn't bring in a guy like this. But Peter, it's a team that was 6-12 in the conference, 16-17 overall. But because of NIL and transfer, he can turn this team around in a year, can he not?
It doesn't. You're right. I mean, like, I think in football, guys, you're talking about, or do you have facilities? Do you have a pipeline? Do you have 2 or 3 years to build up a roster of 100 players to where you can make a difference, right? Look at what Ole Miss is doing with Lane Kiffin over the last couple of seasons. But in basketball, you bring in 6 guys, 7 guys, and hell, it might just be 4 or 5 guys. Can you do that when you've got, you know, allegedly $6 million of funds to look at? I mean, you're going, it's not as if they're asking you to go play at Alaska Tech. I mean, you're playing in Bud Walton Arena in Fayetteville. I mean, this, no offense to Alaska Tech. I mean, it's a fine program, but still, I mean, kids are going to want to go play for Cal. Drake is going to go put on his Arkansas Razorback gear. And I'm sure he's going to be over there flying private into, you know, the Tyson private airfield sooner or later. So it's just the way of the world. And now the question is, who does Kentucky go to next? And I'm sure the first phone call is likely going to be Nate Oates down at Alabama. It's an $18 million buyout. But, I mean, Nate doesn't strike me as the Alabama guy. He was a Buffalo guy that Greg Byrne, the athletic director, says, hey, come on down and help this program. And so I don't know how loyal he is to it. And how often do you get an opportunity to take a blue blood program at its lowest point and possibly rebuild it? That's a hell of an opportunity for him.
It seems to be the name everyone has circled right now. Again, more, you know, inside the SEC influence and trading of these coaches here. Peter, about a minute left here. With that in mind now, what is the legacy ultimately of Cal at Kentucky, this place that is such a rich basketball tradition where he spent 15 seasons?
Yeah, he brought it back. I mean, Kentucky basketball was one of the blue bloods of the sport, and it had reached some tough times. And I think that's what's going to happen, is we're going to have this revisionist history of, you know, or the recency bias is going to be what happened over the last couple seasons. But if you look at where Kentucky was 15 years ago and what Cal did and brought that title and got a bunch of NBA stars and brought the Kentucky brand out, it's going to be good. And again, I think this ends up being a good run for everybody, including every single one of these men's basketball head coaches that are going to use the Kentucky job to get leverage. Like what Jimmy Sexton did when Nick Saban retired, everybody's going to use this and be like, maybe I'll go to Kentucky. And they're all going to get brand new deals. And they're all going to be billionaires, but not Tyson Chicken billionaires.
Yes, you won't have quite the chicken money, but your money's still going to be pretty good right now. You're right. Agents are ultimately the winner here, and the rest of the coaches around the country that are going to leverage this into that payday. Check out Peter Burns on ESPN and the SEC Network. Listen to him on ESPN Radio and SiriusXM. PB, you're the best, brother. Don't delete social media anymore. You're right. You're on probation from that. Just leave it there. Don't touch it as much, and we'll all be good.
Love you, boys. Remember, you want to be friends with billionaires. You want to have friends that have the planes and have the boats. You don't have to do any of the work. You just show up and go party and have fun. All right.
Exactly.
That's a great piece of advice. Yeah.
It's the God's honest truth, Dad, especially the boat part there. I love a good boat day, but the thought of having to do the maintenance, the upkeep, I've seen what that looks like. Hell on earth. No bit. No, thank you.
Listen, I will attempt to be a billionaire if, you know, given the choice. If I'm going to hit one of these lotteries, you know, and be a billionaire, I'll give it a shot just to see how I do.
Yeah, the Powerball number continues to tick up right now. We all fantasize about the first thing that we do. Dad would be learn how to pronounce billionaire.
Gojo and Golic with an update. In case you missed it on Friday, Bronny James possibly going to the NBA. Woj tweeted at USC Trojans freshman guard Bronny James will enter the 2024 NBA draft while maintaining his college eligibility and will also enter the transfer portal. He posted that on Instagram Friday. 25 games, guys, at USC, averaged under 5 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds. We know, of course, he dealt with that heart condition, so a little health scare there. And there's a lot of moving parts here because he could go to the draft or he could remain in college. His dad, possibly retirement in the future. We know he wanted to play with his son. So, Gojo, when you look at this, and this is interesting, I want to hear from your guys' perspective to think about playing with your dad and senior playing with your son. That is the cool storyline here. But, of course, we didn't really see the production from Bronny in college. So how do you see this one turning out, Gojo?
All I could think about now is how much pain my dad would have been in trying to play football until 2013.
Not saying it was possible, but I'm saying the thought of it.
The thought of it induces the face that my dad's making right now, where he thinks about how bad everything hurts now. Because, Dad, 2013, how old would you have been at that point? How far past Tom Brady would you have had to make it to even attempt to play with me in Pittsburgh in 2013?
Well, That's 11 years ago, and I'm 61, so do the math.
Man.
You're looking at, 50 years old. I mean, I watch games now. I know we all do. As you finish, you see the hitting, you say, my God, I used to do that. It looks so violent. But when you do it, you don't care. But I could not even fathom that. And I think it's cool. Listen, I got this watch, Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. play together. That was a very, very cool thing in baseball. So if they can pull this off, the one thing here is LeBron is still playing great. So if you're still talking just another year, maybe two, he may still be a really productive player. And a lot of people jumping on Bronny for this, Mike, saying, oh, he's declaring for the draft. Oh, the guy averaged 5 points. Man, so what? Let him declare. I mean, because you have the ability to go back, see what your worth is, go to the combine. He has to get cleared to go to the combine because of the heart condition that's happened a couple other times with a couple other players. Go there and see it. I mean, you have that ability. That's the beauty of this, is you could test those waters and then go back. USC coach left for SMU, so you're going to get multiple, people transferring. You do anyway. So, good for him. See what the NBA scouts say, see what happens at the combine, if you get cleared and go there, and see what happens. I mean, it's amazing. Again, when you're the son of one of the greatest of all time, a lot is going to get thrown at you, no doubt about that. But, man, so what? And people declare, so what if he declared? He has a choice. He didn't relinquish his eligibility in college. He can still play.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. As we get to the new world order of college sports and all the different changes, it's going to take a while for people to get used to the ebbs and flows of all this. We saw this in college football with the transfer portal. I remember Notre Dame fans freaking out because a bunch of guys entered the transfer portal right after the season. And then a month later, when a bunch of guys came to Notre Dame in the transfer portal, everyone realized, this guy's not falling. This is just a new cadence of life we're getting used to. With college basketball, it's the same way, because exactly of what you mentioned, the fact that you can explore the draft process, potentially come back, and also entering your name in the portal is that same sort of testing of the waters financially, fit wise and otherwise, when you've got a coach moves or not in this sport. So you're going to see more and more players doing this. We've talked about the timing of that with the portal. But, Dad, I think the interesting part with Bronny here, too, is what you mentioned. It'd be cool if they were able to play together. I think a lot of people's concern and wonder is this trying to force something too fast for Bronny? What does this mean for his overall development? Would you be forsaking what's better for the rest of his career for what's the better story for the two of them now, or this dream that LeBron James has had? And I do think there's an interesting conversation around that, just in terms of what is actually better for someone's basketball development. Because we hear and talk about all the time, college basketball is this overcoached product that people view by and large as something that doesn't necessarily translate as perfectly to the NBA. It's why before NIL, you saw these places like the G League Ignite and others start to pop up as this alternative path for players there, where the sell is, hey, you can play against other guys that are pros. You can learn the game that you're going to be playing at the NBA level a little bit more closely resembling that, and go from there. So is there any part of you that worries about this from a development standpoint for someone in Bronny who's still getting to his best basketball?
Well, why I do worry about it a little bit is because because of the dad factor. Will somebody take a chance on him, even though they may not think he's ready, because what could possibly come along with him? Dad. So all of a sudden, you're now a team that says, hey, if we get Bronny, you know, we get LeBron, which is not only you getting a really good player, but you're going to get seats filled, right? I mean, that's the reality of this. You're going to get a ton of attention to your team. So there may be a team, because normally you would say, man, this is business. Nobody is taking a guy because his dad plays, or for this reason or for that reason, because there's X amount of spots on the roster and you can't afford to do that. Well, I don't think we've seen a situation like this where the son can come into the league and the dad is still playing at an incredible level. So you take the son, you get the dad, which to your point, and I agree with, may be unfair to the son because he may not be ready for the next moment. But, you know, if he put himself in the draft, then that means if he likes where he may end up, he'll stay in the draft. But the winning ticket there is that team will probably get LeBron.
Yeah, and it sounds like the reporting says that the NBA would be the priority if they get the right information back. Rich Paul at Clutch Sports, unsurprisingly, going to be the one representing Bronny James Jr., the longtime friend of his father and now one of the most powerful agents in the world of basketball, let alone the world of sports. So, yeah, Dad, I think ultimately what this always boils down to with me is, as long as this is what Bronny wants, and it seems like he's a guy who's never really shied away from this idea that, yes, I am LeBron James's son, but I still want to pursue basketball. Right. This is still the thing I love. By all accounts, he's worked extremely hard at it. I remember when he was coming out of high school, this was a guy that everyone talked about. Yeah, he's actually developed into a player worthy of the conversations we're having. And this year had the setback with his health, had the setback at the start of that season, and it never really put up the kind of numbers that people maybe expected of someone with that name value. But I think this is still a guy. Listen, if you were somehow to wind up in a situation where he's in the NBA, I think based on who's in his household and the basketball pedigree there, I worry a lot less about his basketball development because of that. When I was a kid, you know, very different, smaller scale. But man, people always talk about the pedigree stuff, like me having you in the house when I was growing up playing football, someone who had walked that specific path and knew all those things about getting to those junctures, whether it was college or trying to make the jump to the NFL. There is an inherent advantage with that. We talk about, you know, nepotism really isn't the right word for it because that's more about creating the opportunity. But I think it's having that structure, having that kind of coaching in the house and having someone who is played and experienced so much at that level to help you as you develop through your game. Like for me in youth athletics, when it was you as my coach at Pop Warner football, I have no doubt that put me so much farther ahead than a lot of my peers who didn't have that same coaching early on. And so Bronny's been getting that every step of the way inside his home. And that's why I think I worry a little bit less about how this goes on the back end for him.
Yeah, nothing will be surprising to him, right? And that's what I tried to do for especially you and Jake on the football field is, okay, this is what to expect. If you want to get to a certain point, this is what you need to do. And of course, you know, Bronny and his brother Bryce have been a part of that and seeing that with possibly the greatest of all time, showing them the way and showing them the work ethic. So that's a big thing is a lot of times you get a little wide-eyed, though less today because of the upbringing from AAU to all the way to the NBA, which has become more, you know, more seamless, even though we don't like some of it. But nothing will surprise him. I agree with you that it'll be about, okay, I understand this. I understand I have to do that. And then whatever the development needs, you know, he is certainly, I'm sure, going to be able to try and do.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's a good way to put it. There is going to be nothing that surprises him. But still, there is no doubt if he makes this jump, going to be a massive target on his back, not only because of who he is, but listen, his dad said a lot of stuff on his behalf that I'm sure guys around the league in a private moment have not always enjoyed hearing, that LeBron's son is better than half of them right now as he sits here in college, averaging just over 5 points a game. So plenty to keep an eye on with that as we march forward here and LeBron James Jr. explores his future. But coming up next in our future, hushed tones, rustled leaves, beautiful floral arrangements and sights and sounds around Augusta National. It is Masters Week, folks. And coming up next, we will figure out what we need to get the roar back on Sundays next.